You're listening to Radically Pragmatic, a podcast from the Progressive Policy Institute. We talk with lawmakers, policy experts, and thought leaders about the issues driving the news nationally and internationally. The Progressive Policy Institute is a catalyst for policy innovation and political reform with offices in Washington, D.C. and Brussels. Its mission is to create radically pragmatic ideas for moving America beyond ideological and partisan deadlock. We encourage analytical conversations, not your typical partisan talking points.
Welcome back to the next series of the Reinventing America Schools podcast from the Progressive Policy Institute. My name is Curtis Valentine. I'm co-director of the Reinventing America Schools project. This series we are calling The Future is Woman is in collaboration with EdChoice, and we are here in New Orleans for the 2023 Essence Fest. So excited to be here, and I have an amazing lineup of educators who are here for the festivities, but have taken time out of their schedule to sit with me to talk about the importance and impact of women in education. My guest today, is an amazing brother, a household name in education, someone whose experience and voice is one that is coveted from every state in America, from every level of education. And I'm so glad to have my brother, Dr. Steve Perry. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, brother.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to participate in the conversation.
And so you're here in New Orleans at Essence Fest. What have you done so far since you've been here?
So I'm here. I was with EdChoice and Big Picture Learning, participated in a conversation yesterday about leadership, more specifically. Because I think there's an interest in understanding how people lead in this space. It's not just the act of running schools or the act of advocacy or the act of creating opportunity, but it's who is behind that. So yesterday we talked about who's behind that.
And so you are a school founder and an organization that has been hugely successful in the education space that for years we've been talking about how to get better at. And so again, this is why it's important that you're here. But tell us about your schools and what about the school founding work and the Capital Prep most excites you?
When we started Capital Prep, I was running a part-time out-of-school program, an Upward Bound program. So Capital Prep was born out of an Upward Bound program. And the reason for that is because I had gone through an Upward Bound program. I was the first in my family to go to college. And I'd seen what it had done for me. So I was working in this Upward Bound program that we'd started in Hartford. And what would happen was we would work with the scholars over the summer, get them tight and right for the upcoming year, give them the classes that they were going to take in the fall. So if they were going to take algebra in the fall, we would give them algebra during the summer. And what would happen is I noticed that my kids, all of whom were black or Latin and poor for the most part, when I sent them to their receiving schools, algebra in particular, they would end up in classes that were not the classes that they were scheduled to be in. And I just found it odd. I didn't think much of it. I went to school for social work, and so I was not versed in the system of education. So when we would send the kids back to their school, I would go look at their schedule maybe a week or so into the school year, and they'd have these goofy ass classes like metropolitan math or extended algebra or something that didn't say algebra. And if you know, you understand that that was a way for our kids to not end up with the requisite courses that they needed to go to a four-year college. And being in part-time out-of-school program that was designed to send kids to college, I'd find myself with a senior who didn't have enough math classes. Mm-hmm. And so at one point I had a conversation with someone who was a sister who was a principal, a really solid sister, Ann Ford, and she was trying to push back against the system that she was in. And so she said, you should talk to somebody. here in this school system, Windsor Public Schools in Windsor, Connecticut, which is just outside of Hartford, which was at one point the second wealthiest black suburb. That's why this is important in America. Because it wasn't that the kids were poor. It was just that they were black. You couldn't say they were poor. That was why. Or their parents didn't know better. That was why. It wasn't the case. So I asked a woman who is white, who was the chair of the math department. I said, hey, my kids keep ending up in this extended algebra class. And the extended algebra was three semesters of algebra. So your freshman year, you'd take algebra. And then your sophomore, you'd begin in algebra. Then your second semester, sophomore year, you wouldn't have a math. Then you start your next sequence of math classes in your junior year, thereby making sure that you were systematically denied access to the coursework that was necessary to perform well on the SAT or the ACT if you were so inclined to take it. And so the woman explained to me, you know, I said, did my kids fail a test or something during it? Like, because I know I have grades from the summer and I employed your teachers during the summer to work with my kids. And I have your books that I'm teaching from. So I'm not sure why my kids keep ending up here. So she, very polite woman, she said, well, give me the list of your kids and we'll take them out of the class. I said, no, that's not the, your, mine are coming out. That's a fait accompli. But why do they keep ending up there?
Yeah.
And so it came to pass that I just thought, I could run schools at least as bad as these people. I mean, I could do this. And so we put together a team of people to get the school started. And in real talk, initially, it was bliggity black. I mean, everybody on the team was black. And we had a fantastic first meeting because black people, we love to meet. We're really good at meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, spectacular. And that meeting was in 2001. If we have a second meeting, that crew, it's going to be equally good.
Oh, yeah.
I had to just get together a team that wanted to win.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter, black or white. I needed people who wanted to win. And so we put together another team, and everybody just worked for almost 2 years to put it together. So,
you know, it's funny. I mean, I've heard you speak, I don't know, 1,000 times, but I did not know your school started from your work as Upward Bound.
Yeah.
That's so funny how you learn. I mean, this is why this podcast is important, because you learn things about people who are out there in the public, but you just didn't know the origin story. Mm-hmm. So this is exciting. So talk about how Capital Prep particularly centers the experience of black women, black girls, in your leadership, at your in your school building, in your curriculum. How does that work?
Well, I mean, I am the only man on my leadership team.
You're thinking, those who can't see your face.
Our chiefs are all women, black or Latin. Our superintendents are black women.
Mm-hmm.
But of equal and greater importance, especially just 72 hours after the Supreme Court has put yet another systemic barrier in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to note that them being black is also important,
mm-hmm.
but they're damn skilled.
Absolutely.
I will put our team up against any team of any color, any race, any nationality, anywhere on earth.
Mm-hmm.
What they can do, they can do.
Yeah.
And they're black, and they're women. And I think that that's an important distinction to make, because let it be known that I choose the black women with whom I work because they're talented,
mm-hmm.
and black women. I choose the Latinas because they're talented and Latina, and the white women for the same reasons. But our team, if you can't work for a woman, you won't work.
Yeah, you're in trouble. Yeah.
You'll struggle.
Isn't it? So before we started recording, we talked about our wives. Your wife is in education. My wife is in education. And those who know me know, you know, I'm a huge advocate for brothers in education. And it started in my school district because there were brothers who were applying for leadership positions. They were interviewed. They wouldn't get them. And I went and spoke to our HR director, who's a brother. And he said, Curtis, what's the name of the brother who came to you and said he's been interviewing, couldn't get it? And I said his name. He says, yeah, Kurt, he's not tight. Nothing wrong with him. He's just not, he was not ready for that interview. Mm-hmm. And he says, Curtis, the sisters in our district, they're just tight when it comes to the process of getting a portfolio together and everything in preparation. And so we started working with those brothers. And so we, that was a process. Let's get these brothers right. But the idea was always the sisters, they work together. They have mentors. They go through mock interviews. They're sitting down. They're mock interviews. They're dressed. They're ready. And it was just getting brothers to that point. And we did that. And it was, and we're still getting there. And we're still doing that. But to have women in our lives who are also so talented, mm-hmm. regardless of obviously their gender and race, also, you know, in many ways, it's just like a factor. But it's like at the center of their core, they just want to be the best they can be, mm-hmm. and brothers benefit. Not only just sort of as coworkers, but as like, hey, what are you doing differently that I can do to become just as prepared for opportunities? Because mm-hmm. I can be capable. I just need to get tight. And so that's so important. So we're here at Essence Fest, and this again, New Orleans. Those of you have not been down here, it is amazing to see brothers and sisters just walking around and connecting. And so you've been here for a day or so. I'm sure you're familiar with Essence Fest. Like, why are gatherings like Essence Fest so important to you and the work in education and just our people in this country?
I bet if we did a poll of the attendees, no less than 50%, I would imagine, in some way or another, earned their living by working in education.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the people who are down here are educators proper, meaning they work in a school. Beyond that, there are many coaches who are down here and or people who work with children, either through their church or their mosque or their community work, their sorority, their fraternity, their auxiliary organization. And so, by and large, those people who are showing their assets in this community now are educators. And so, excuse me, one of the things I think that's important is that that group has an opportunity to refuel, to connect, to just be humans. The circumstances under which we are educating now are troubling.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was the hardest year I've had in education. And the year before that was harder than the year before. It's not getting easier. And so for me, selfishly as an educator, I want our educators to get right. So if this is an opportunity for them to come and refuel, I want them to have that. Also, Essence Magazine has meant so much to us as a culture. In many, a black bathroom is a stack of Essence Magazine.
Yes, sir.
Telling us how beautiful we are and how capable we are and how good we are. It is rare that you will find a hard-hitting piece of journalism that tears down someone who's African-American in Essence Magazine. So we need to celebrate us in this country that does not celebrate us. So Essence, on a practical level, I think it provides a lot of people, sisters in particular, an opportunity for them to come together. They call it a family reunion. I think that's what it is. I've been coming since 2007. I remember I was, when I had my first book, I just wanted, I just prayed like one day, man, if I could just go to Essence and like, even if I don't get to go in, if I could just be there, I'll just stand outside and sell my books. And then to find myself on the main stage hosting was surreal. But it's the experience as a whole that I think that's important for people to just be part of it, to see vendors, large and small, being a part of something big. I'll tell you a really quick story. So one day I was on my way to the arena, and it stopped to get, you know, because everybody here can cook, like literally everyone can cook. If they can stand up, they can cook. And so I was going, I was getting a, just this vat of fried fish is basically what they ate. And I found myself sitting next to Ralph Tresvant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So Ralph and I are just chopping it up, sitting on the curb, eating fish out of styrofoam container, because it's that kind of experience.
That, yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter who you are. It's a coming home. It's a family experience. And so while we're sitting there, the sister comes over and she's like, oh my God, oh my God. I don't take your picture. So I, you know, I got up and to move out of the way so that she could take Ralph's picture. And I, you know, I'm asking, do you need me to hold your food for you while he does that? And she's like, no, I want to take your picture.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought that coming.
And I'm like, do you see who I'm sitting next to? Yeah. This is Ralph. She's, oh my God, I didn't recognize him. Because me, you can imagine sitting on a curb eating fried
yeah,
fish.
Him, yeah, him, nah.
This is that kind of experience. You know, you're just like, people are here. It's a, people are here. And people you've seen who you think are famous or well-known or whatever, who feel have notoriety, are just here. It's not here. Like they're being, well, some of them, because they're different. But most people are just among the people. And it's a really safe and loving environment is the point I'm making. So we need those kinds of places where people can come and see people they've admired for years. On the ride down here, I sat next to Paris from EPMD.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So we spent the time just talking, and I'm the like biggest EPMD fan.
Wow. You
understand? I am a...
So Paris is here at Essence. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So he and I were just... Honestly, because everybody's flying down, so he and I pushed back, and he was sitting in the middle seat. He's like, I never met in the middle seat.
get it. Get it how you live.
Yeah.
It's so the question, so here's sort of a pivot. So what's missing?
And so
what stories and voices is Essence missing? Does Essence Fest have any blind spots in the stories they're telling and the people who are putting on their main stage?
Yeah, I think that the challenge of Essence Fest is that we have a captive audience, but they're captivated to be entertained.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally fine. I have had the opportunity to participate in a number of really important conversations down here that are not nearly as well attended as somebody giving away free makeup.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not lying.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just that way. So... you know, I struggle with that because I want people to have a release. But selfishly, when I see this many black people who are doing well, I mean, you coming down to Essence, you're going to spend some bread. Mm-hmm. I mean, for real, mm-hmm. This is not a $100 weekend that you're looking at.
Yeah.
You're going to spend some bread from the time you land to the time you land. Mm-hmm. It's going to be that. And so I think that one of the biggest missed opportunities at Essence is to have a conversation, a real conversation about school choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, black people, are the ones who are most in need of being freed from the limitations of our neighborhoods. We are the ones who are the most in need to be inspired to open our own schools. We are the one, I mean, there's so many pastors who come down here who have hundreds of acres of land, tens of thousands of square feet of property,
mm-hmm.
and who could be home to schools. I mean, we talk about K-12 school choice, but it's been a long time since we've opened another black college. And so, I think with so many educators here, it would be, and because there's so many moms here, moms, grandmoms, great grandmothers, to have an honest conversation about how we educate our children in this country and have it here in a safe space where the teachers union doesn't buy up the booth and get their shills out there to lie to people about how it's important to keep our kids in schools in their neighborhood against their will.
And you're in New Orleans. And there's a story, I think even oftentimes we go to conferences and you land in cities, but what's happening outside of the bubble of the conference sort of gets lost. Yeah. And there is a story about people going into the Superdome for some concert. Like, I still vividly see photos of people like lining up to get into the Superdome because of Katrina.
Yeah.
And that was just obviously a microcosm of a lot of issues in this country going back hundreds of years, but we're still in New Orleans. And on the students who you see walking around and serving you, who are sort of in this sort of early hospitality management pipeline, are going back to schools that were opened after Katrina and some even more recently. But there is a conversation, and it's a heavy conversation for some people. You're right. I just come here. I got a lot going on back in Houston, in New York, in L.A. But at the same time, it could be a missed opportunity.
It is. And I want to thank Essence because, again, they've given me many, many opportunities to have this conversation. It's not for lack of trying. I mean that. It's not that they're not trying. But, you know, I'm sitting on a platform with other people who do what I do, and then Lisa Ray walks by and they're like, follow her. or really happened. Or, you know, somebody says Usher's on the other side of the building and then the entire building shifts to the right. I get it. I get that. I really do get it. On the same token, I have sat in on some conversations that have been really intense and purposeful. So, you know, being Black is a full-time job. You don't get to take time off.
Yeah.
And I think that this is an opportunity for a lot of people to both take time off and be Black.
Couple more questions before I let you go, man. Just as let folks know, what's your next move, man? What are you working on? What's in the hopper?
So we have a school that was approved in Connecticut, and the funding for the school was pulled at 11:48 p.m. before the vote at 12 midnight by two white state senators, one of whom is the president of the teachers union. And so I am going to be part of a group of people who are going to make their decision one that they live to regret.
Consequential.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to make sure that they understand that denying African Americans access to an education founded by African Americans is problematic, and that we're going to show them just how bad of a decision that was. There's a paradox that we have in education where our allies, our truest allies in the pursuit of equitable education, are the same people who would just as soon do away with affirmative action. Meanwhile, our adversaries in education who would support something like affirmative action are the ones who are trying to stop us from creating our own schools.
Yeah.
And so on both sides, we find ourselves fighting friends and foes and trying to find a way to pull together a coalition of people who understand that school choice is a requirement that no middle-class person would ever forfeit, ever. There's no middle-class person who's made it to the middle class who's prepared to allow anyone to determine where to send their children to school. So that coalition continues to grow. We've started a couple of organizations over the past couple of years, Freedom Coalition for Charter Schools, which we're changing the name, the Freedom Coalition for School Choice, for Choice Schools, I should say, so FCCS still. Black, another organization we started in New York that fights specifically as Black, Latin, Asian Charter Collaborative. And then a group we started in Connecticut called My Child, My Choice. And My Child, My Choice is another organization that continues to fight for school choice. And spending the summer getting better, just really reflecting on what I can do better at my job. I didn't come in this to be average, so I want to get better at what I do. So I'll spend a considerable amount of time looking at what we've done well and what we've done poorly. The teacher shortage is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've hired people who I wouldn't have interviewed years ago. I've hired people and put them in positions of leadership who I would never have hired at all before. The teacher shortage is a spectacular failure of the system to encourage people to participate in an industry where it's just super cool. So, I mean, the work. That's what I mean.
Before I let you go, I want you to shout out, what are some sisters who don't get enough attention? Again, you have a platform, you have a microphone in front of you. It's also an opportunity for us to talk about who are some of the women, black women, in this work that you think deserve opportunities like this to have their voice out there and their story to be told.
Yeah, so first I'm going to shout my team out. I have Dr. Ayanna Carter, who heads up our schools in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I have Angela Logan, who heads up our schools in New York. I have a sister on our team who is just spectacular. She does our professional learning. Her name is Danita Jones. Danita Jones is doing her doctorate at Virginia State, a FAMU alum and founder of our Harlem School, founding principal of our Harlem School. She's going to be presenting in Greece her work on the impact that the pandemic has had on learning within the black community. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We're not playing. Then sisters on the come up, there's a young woman. Her name is, I call her Miss Askew. She's down here in New Orleans. She's got a school down here. Jay Artis Rice is heads up our, heads up Freedom Coalition. I mean, I could spend a day bigging up sisters who are getting it done. I mean, getting it done. There is no urban education without black women.
At all.
Actually, it goes away. There's no one left without them.
So yeah.
The list is long, but I'm starting with my squad and then working our way out from there.
That's outstanding, brother. And sisters, we thank you. Yes. And we stand with you. Thank you so much, brother. I know you got a plane to catch. This is Dr. Steve Perry, who sat down with me, took time here at Essence Fest for this edition of our Arise Report series, The Future is Woman. And so I thank you so much. You listened to our latest episode. Again, my name is Curtis Valentine. Sat down here with my good brother, Dr. Steve Perry, founder and CEO of Capital Prep, Charter School Network, and just a powerful brother in education, man. So thank you so much, and safe travels back to.
Always a pleasure to see you, whether here or at Morehouse.
Oh yes, sir. Oh yeah, we had a little Morehouse drop there. I didn't do that; he did. So just know that that was on him. But I'll do it unapologetically as well. But thank you all so much, and look forward to our next episode. Peace.
Thanks for listening. Want to learn more about the Progressive Policy Institute? Follow us on Twitter at PPI and on Facebook at Progressive Policy Institute, or go to our website at progressivepolicy.org. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen and check back for new episodes. We'll talk with you soon.